From inside the WAER studios.
Long outlet pass, Ryan Simmons inside! He scores the game winner! Give the assist to Don Mattona! Syracuse wins!
Finds Guerrier, open, drives baseline, goes up, and hammers it home! Quincy Guerrier, hello!
And it's intercepted! Andre Sisco!
Flings it from 75 feet past the scoreboard, and he connected! Elijah Hughes throws up a prayer at the buzzer! And somehow it's answered.
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
The Orange, take the Camping World Bowl.
Syracuse gets the program signature win it always needed. Perhaps the biggest upset in program history.
Taj Harris passed the 45. He's past midfield. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Syracuse.
And one, Joe Girard.
Three ball, Buddy Boeheim. He got all three of them. Huge shot from Buddy.
Pass point. Black got it. Game winner. Brendan Curry with the winner.
Hughes left wing charges and slams with the right hand.
Killing a three at the buzzer. Oh, it's good. He made it.
And here's your hosts, Owen Valentine and Ben Shulman.
Welcome into the Ostrom Avenue Podcast with Ben Shulman. I'm Owen Valentine talking Alan Griffin, the Illinois transfer who was just cleared for immediate eligibility by the NCAA last week. Lots of impact on that, on the team, on him individually. We've got a lot to break down, a lot to talk about. We're going to hear from Jeremy Werner of the Illinois Inquirer, 24/7 Sports and CBSI. He's got a lot to talk about as Alan Griffin as an individual player and him as just an individual. So we'll kind of start more in the macro and then narrow things down there. We're talking Griffin on Twitter right now. If you want to interact with our poll, we're talking his points per game in theory this upcoming season. Give us your thoughts on that. See what points range you think he's going to land in. We'd love to hear your thoughts at Ostrom Avenue Pod. But right now, we'll just talk macro. There's a lot of implications of his immediate eligibility. It shakes things up a lot lineup-wise. Ben, what's just the first thought on this?
This is really exciting. I think, personally, for me, for a Syracuse team that very rarely goes more than seven or eight deep, this seems like there might be a lot more lineup versatility than usual for the Orange, not just because of Griffin, but now when you add Griffin in, there's about four or five guys between 6'5 and 6'8 that should see the floor this year. I think Boeheim is going to be able to rest some of his guys a little more, and that could be fun, a fun side effect of the addition of Alan Griffin.
Yeah, and I think the big thing about his, you know, immediate eligibility is this kind of takes a Syracuse team that is kind of in a rebuilding, kind of get me through this season kind of year, and it takes them into a year where they can actually compete and compete in the ACC and an NCAA tournament if there is one. And obviously we don't know what the season will actually look like, but this immediate eligibility kind of turns this Syracuse team into a team that has a lot to play for this year because they now have the tools. And I think this lifts them into that next kind of caliber where they are going to be a competitive team and able to hold their own in the ACC and make a run in an NCAA tournament if there is one. So this is a huge kind of jump for them, and it propels them into that next tier. But you mentioned it, that 6'4", 6'5", to kind of 6'8"-ish range is jam-packed with a lot of action right now. And Griffin was kind of sold by Syracuse on that 30-plus minutes per game, basically being told he was going to start, play his 30 minutes, which really mixes things up because you've got Girard, you've got Boeheim, you've got Griffin now, all presumably playing 30-plus minutes per game. It definitely mixes things up. You got a guy like Kadari Richmond, who a lot of people thought might start, myself included. Now that Griffin's here, it's definitely going to mix those minutes up. You've got Guerrier, who was really pushing for a starting spot, who's now, in theory, going to be that sixth man once again. And then you've got guys like Woody Newton and a lot of, you know, different guys that maybe their minutes that they were expected to see are definitely going to be shaken up. So I'm really interested to see how Boeheim is able to distribute those minutes, because you've got presumably three 30-minute guys in Girard, Boeheim, and Griffin right now.
First, just to comment on where you started with the changing of the perspective of the season now. I mean, this is a front-end addition to the roster. Like, make no mistake about Alan Griffin. It's weird to look at his numbers last year because he averaged fewer than 10 points, and we'll get into a little more of him as an individual going forward. But this guy, you know, could easily step onto the floor and be the best player on the Syracuse roster this year. I'm not guaranteeing it, but there's a chance, and there are the raw skills there to do it. what I think is interesting from a lineup perspective is when you mention not just Richmond, but also Quincy Guerrier, he's someone who wants to and looks like he's prepared to take a step forward this season. So while I agree with you that I don't think he'll earn the starting spot at the beginning, just because I think it'll go to Griffin, to be completely honest with you, I think in that three, if there is a three or if it's a third guard, whatever you want to call it, Quincy Guerrier's rebounding ability could shove himself into the lineup, I think, for Griffin, or I also think with Griffin, if Syracuse then says, maybe we don't need Dolezal and Sidibe in the game, because Alan Griffin is a strong rebounder as well, pair him with Quincy Guerrier, and the two wings can grab the ball pretty well off the defensive glass for Syracuse.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of different looks, and it's going to be very interesting to see, you know, what Boeheim comes out with early on in the season, if he's going to be mixing it up a lot early, testing things out with that small ball kind of lineup, which you've seen him use in the past kind of because of, you know, foul trouble by Sidibe and Edwards off the bench. So to see them go small, and Griffin is a really strong rebounder, just crashes the boards. He's got a handful of incredible highlight reel putback dunks in his two seasons at Illinois. And there is a lot that he can kind of put onto the table when paired with Guerrier, and they can kind of, you know, become that smaller back three in the 2-3 zone where they're going to be able to compete even though they're not going to have that true big. And you've seen them do it, and especially with some of the smaller lineups in the ACC, it's going to be a really effective asset to this team and a really effective, you know, play style for the Orange. But it brings up those questions, because there's going to be a lot of, you know, possible moving pieces, because there are a lot of guys that are interchangeable in terms of position, in terms of skill, in terms of play style. There's talk of Guerrier's three-point shooting really having improved and him becoming a much better three-point asset. And if that comes out and he is shooting like that, then maybe he does fight for a handful of those minutes from Griffin, or being subbed in and kind of playing that 3-4 where they're both going to be playing in a smaller lineup, because Griffin can shoot lights out. He shoots the hell out of the ball, and I don't expect him to drop that much. He shot 41% from three last season. Maybe there's a little bit of a drop off as the volume is presumably going to rise, but I don't think he's going to drop too far off of that 40-ish percent clip, maybe high 30s, mid 30s at the worst. I think he's going to be able to shoot at that clip. And if Guerrier can, you know, complement that, and Syracuse now has Girard, Boeheim, Griffin, and Guerrier, and Richmond even throwing threes up and being able to shoot threes, that's going to be another really good look for the Orange. But the one thing I like about Griffin is it's kind of, there's not necessarily that star out of the three, but you've got three guys, and it kind of is the replacement of Hughes, but a little bit of a lower tier, I would say. But you've got Girard, Boeheim, and Griffin, who all can get hot at any point in time. And it was one of those assets that, when things were working for Syracuse, was so valuable last season, they just couldn't get it going at a frequent enough rate.
Yeah, for me, this team is kind of maybe even like a 1-1A, 1-B team in terms of who the star is, because I really think from Boeheim to Girard to Griffin, and who even knows who else could enter the fold this year, there's so many guys on any given night that could be the lead option. Just to go back to playing Guerrier beside Griffin on defense, it makes me think back to when Guerrier and Hughes would be the wings last year, and just what an improvement Syracuse will have this year from that rebounding and potentially defensive perspective as well, because I love Elijah Hughes. He wasn't an incredible defensive player. Griffin has shown a little more activity on the back end. So I think you improve a lot there. But what I want to ask you is, if you were to do that, let's say in my perfect world, because I really like that lineup where you play Griffin and Guerrier on the wings, is Sidibe coming out of the lineup or is Dolezal coming out of the lineup?
That one's got to be a game by game, because I think you saw Sidibe start to develop himself towards the end of the season, and maybe that was a bit of a fluke. Maybe that's what you're going to come to see from him this year, but it's all going to depend. I think it's nice for Boeheim to be able to have the options, but I think if Sidibe is playing remotely close to how we kind of finished the season in that stretch of double doubles and starting to figure things out, staying out of foul trouble, if he can play in that light, I'd love to have him down low with that smaller lineup, and then him in the center of the zone would be a really valuable thing. But if that's not the case, I think you do know that you can put Dolezal at the five. You do know that he's going to be able to, you know, competently run that position, but I think that's going to be a game by game situation and a nice little asset for the Orange to have. But if Sidibe is not going to be in foul trouble, I don't see why you're going to want to put Dolezal down low. I know he's that hustle guy. I know he's a fan favorite. I love watching him play. I love what he does. But if Sidibe is playing like he was to round that season out, I don't see how you can justify taking him out of the lineup, at least for the entire game, if you're going to try and do that smaller lineup where you're going to throw Griffin and Garia in at the same time. I think it should be Sidibe that stays in, but if you're going to mix that up and go true small with Dolezal, I think that's going to be fine as well.
I agree with you also, partly because of the type of team this is. When I look at Sidibe and Dolezal, I see Dolezal's floor as a lot higher, but Sidibe's ceiling is a lot higher. So I know when, as you said, you know what you're going to get out of Mark Dolezal. There's going to be a lot of effort, decent activity on the glass. But when Barama Sidibe really switches on, he can be one of the better big men in the ACC. He just hasn't been able to build that up consistently. So I think you start Sidibe as well, especially now, considering if Dolezal is on the bench, Sidibe is seemingly not going to have to play as many minutes, so he's not worrying as much about all the fouls he was picking up last year. And even though I can't believe I'm saying this, considering the number of fouls he had last year, he can play more aggressively if he would like to. So yeah. I think it benefits the team all around. Even if you end up playing Dolezal more minutes between the four and five, starting Sidibe at the five for me makes the most sense.
And look at the benefits of Griffin in terms of allowing the centers and the fours and fives to be able to play a little bit more freely, because you're going to have that option to go a little smaller with Griffin and Garia. You can let Dolezal and Sidibe, if they are in foul trouble, you're going to be all right because of the depth you've got at the center now with Jesse Edwards, who I assume will have taken a bit of a step, was still really raw and showed a little bit last year. So I'm looking to kind of see where he jumps up, if he does jump up, but you're going to have that depth. John Bolajat coming off a redshirt year. It'll be interesting to see if he finds any minutes or can make the most of practice time to kind of get into that rotation. So you're going to have a little bit more depth. I think Frank and Salem, I can't see a world where he doesn't redshirt this year. I think it's going to be the best for him and his future and the best for Syracuse. But you've got four guys to rotate the four and five now. And even if you want to go small, you've got four guys that can rotate the center now, which means that you're going to have a lot of freedom to play with down low and a lot more forgiveness if someone does get into foul trouble. So the addition of Griffin and that immediate eligibility playing, you know, such great dividends in terms of the depth of this team and the ability to fight through issues in terms of foul trouble or an injury, if there is one, it's going to be really beneficial for the Orange to be able to climb out of that much more easily and with a really talented guy and a real hustle player like Griffin.
Griffin's basically the prototype for making your team versatile. I mean, at 6'5" and the way that he can guard people near the rim as well as out on the perimeter, I really think, and this might be a slight stretch, that he can play positions 1 through 4 in a Syracuse lineup this year. I think very rarely will we see Alan Griffin as the power forward for Syracuse, but I think it's going to happen once this year. One time, for some reason, if Richmond is a contributor especially, they'll go super small because the guy, at least in limited action, has shown the ability to hold his own and actually dominate kind of around the rim. So yeah. I agree with you, not only on the big side, but I think on the small side as well. Let's say Syracuse is down and they're trying to shoot their way out of a game. They could have a lineup that has Gerard, Boeheim, Richmond at the 3 and Allen at the 4. And yeah. I don't think feel like they're really forfeiting too much size.
No, and when you look at what he did defensively at Illinois, not the greatest defender, but still a strong defender, and he was able to guard 1 through 4 of opposing teams, obviously not going up against centers, but he was able to hold his own against a couple of bigger guys last season, so I think he will be fine defensively. And then on the offensive side, I think if you are going to go for that, we need to come back, we need to figure things out and shoot our way out of a deficit, he's going to be a really good asset because of his versatility. I don't think he's going to be bringing the ball up the court a ton. I don't think he's going to be playing the four a ton, but that doesn't mean he can't do it. And that versatility is going to go so far. And it's just a nod to him as a player. And there's still a lot of questions around him. So in order to kind of, you know, answer some of those and look a little bit more into him as a player, him as a person, Ben was able to catch up with Jeremy Werner of the Illinois Inquirer and 24/7 Sports and CBSI, who's covered Illinois basketball and Illini basketball. So it'll be, you know, a little more light shined onto the individual Alan Griffin, not as much into the team impact that we just discussed.
Speaking today with Illinois sports journalist and publisher Jeremy Werner. Jeremy publishes for the Illinois Inquirer, also works for 24/7 Sports and CBSI, and he was the host of the Jeremy Werner Show, which aired on ESPN for multiple years. Jeremy, thank you for joining the program. How are you doing today?
Doing pretty well. Just preparing for a fall without sports here in the Big Ten. We're hoping for basketball in the winter. I know Illinois basketball fans are really excited. Their best team probably about 15, 16 years. But we'll see how it all goes. We're all anxiously awaiting to see how ACC and the SEC and the Big 12, you pack of three, how you guys end up working together this fall.
We talked about it a bit before the show, and I think you're in a really unique spot as a basketball first reporter and all the basketball first reporters, because football kind of knows that things aren't going to happen yet, but you're not really sure, right, if there's going to be a basketball season, when there's going to be a basketball season. So how is it like doing your job with so many questions up in the air?
It's basically just trying to get as many answers to those questions or theories of how they can answer those questions, because honestly, I know the ACC is going to try to play football here. I don't think they know whether they can pull this off or whether they can pull basketball off. I know the SEC is going to be full go, and I think they'll hang in there longer than anybody. But even they have to realize that, hey, we don't know how this is going to go. And I think the answer you always come back to throughout the last 5 months has just been, I don't know. I don't know how they're going to pull this off, because we've never had to deal with this in any of our lifetimes. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of those questions we thought we were answering. Illinois felt good about its protocols on campus. They've had daily testing, the saliva tests, and the FDA just approved an Illinois-based test here. So they feel good about their protocols. But when you get tens of thousands of students on campus, as you're experiencing there at Syracuse, and as you get all these different tens of thousands of kids, then you get way more athletes, and they start socializing. How does this all end up working? And then you try to compete with each other, especially on a football field. I think it's very difficult. But yeah, I think Illinois fans are willing to punt a football season if they can get a basketball season this year. I think they're willing to make that sacrifice, even if it's a big bummer for us, and obviously financially for all these schools.
It was a great season for the Illini. They finished near the top of the Big Ten, nearly combined for that tied regular season championship. And part of that was Alan Griffin, who's the main subject today, just transferred or just recently got his waiver approved. So now he'll play this year for Syracuse, as opposed to sitting out a year, played 2 years at Illinois. And just thinking about his time with the Illini, what sticks out for you about Griffin's game?
I think what sticks out is Illinois made a heck of an evaluation. You know, I know late in that recruitment, Syracuse got involved. It was kind of the in-state school who maybe thought after he committed to Illinois that they could flip him, right? Because Illinois brought attention to Alan Griffin, but obviously he's got the bloodlines with his dad, Adrian, a longtime NBA player, a longtime NBA assistant. His sister plays at UConn. His brother is one of the top prospects in the country going to Duke. So obviously he's got the bloodlines. But Illinois saw something a lot of schools didn't. I mean, he's kind of your typical, you hope eventually 3-and-D guy with plus athleticism. But what Alan Griffin brought to the court was energy. Just brought constant energy to the court. And as good of a three-point shooter as he was the best three-point shooter on an Illinois team that was terrible at shooting threes. What was most impressive, what most people loved, was how he attacked the glass. So there was another freshman alongside of him, Tevian Jones, who's a four-star prospect, both in the same class alongside Iodesumu, who's kind of the star of that class and is the star of Illinois. But, you know, Allen got on the court because he knew what his role was to shoot open shots and to attack the glass. That got him on the court, and it got him a big role, and then he progressed as a sophomore. Well, Tevian Jones just tried to shoot his way into the lineup, and that didn't work. So Alan Griffin just knew what his role was, and he excelled at it. And last year, he was a bench player, but he was one of Illinois' most dangerous players and just a really, really good complimentary piece to Iodesumu, who was an all-Big Ten guard, who's going to be an All-American probably this year, and Kofi Coburn, who's the Big Ten freshman of the year. It was those two, Andres Feliz, who's kind of a senior tough guard, and Alan Griffin. Those are the top four players on the team.
You mentioned his family, and of course, a lot of people know when they talk about Griffin. His father played a decade in the NBA and still coaches. His brother might be the number one overall pick in a few years, and his sister plays at the most storied program in women's college basketball. Griffin, of course, nothing against Illinois, by the way, but didn't go to quite that height so far. Do you still think that there is the capability to build towards something like the rest of his family members have achieved so far?
I think Alan Griffin has NBA potential. I don't think he's a star NBA player, But last year, if you would have told me early in the year who had the highest ceiling on the Illinois basketball season, it might have been Alan Griffin. And that's crazy to say, because he was the sixth man. He was the seventh man, right? But just what the NBA is looking for right now, he's 6 foot six, right? He's a really good athlete. He's got long arms. He shoots threes incredibly well. He doesn't handle it very well yet. But I do think if he works on that, he can be good. But when you're looking for the NBA, what you want are 3-and-D wings. And while he hasn't shown defensively yet that he's quite there, I think that usually comes with maturity and realizing I can make a lot of money if I play that way. But he shoots the ball incredibly well. He's long. He's really athletic. He brings constant good energy. He's obviously got someone good in his ear when it's Adrian Griffin. His dad knows how to get to that level. I think that's important when you have somebody in your life who can give you the advice of, hey, this is what it takes. This is how much work it takes to get to that level. And he and Io DeSumo, who Io has unbelievable work ethic and drive, had grown pretty close here at Illinois. So that's the high end. Now he's got things he needs to work on. As I mentioned, his handle was terrible as a freshman. He turned it over. If he's going to be a lead guard at Syracuse, he's got to improve there. And I think that's where, if he wants to be a first round pick at some point, he's really got to improve that handle. And defensively, just locked in, just locking in on scouting reports. The typical underclassman just got away with things in high school that he can't at the college level. If he locks in defensively, mentally, I think you got a 3-and-D guy that can really intrigue NBA teams and eventually stick in there.
I'm fascinated that you said he was the player with the highest ceiling, only because Griffin averaged fewer than 3 points per game in his freshman season with the Illini. And he's improved a lot. He doubled his minutes, but he tripled his points and his rebounds. Was some of this a fluke for Griffin, or do you think he's that kind of guy that can keep building and building upon his skills?
I think it's natural progression. I think a lot of us expect these guys to come in as ready-made players, and sometimes we forget they're 18, 19 years old and have a lot to figure out, about life, a lot to figure out about playing basketball at this level. And the one thing about Allen is his background, right? I mean, he was a state champion in high school. He was the best player on his team. Was a little bit under-recruited, so he's got a little bit of that chip on his shoulder. And Syracuse didn't get involved until Illinois did, right? I think he's got that, he had a chip on his shoulder about that. And, I think he's been around winning a little bit now. You know, last year at Illinois, that team learned how to win. And Allen was a part of that. I mean, Io DeSumo, we talk about NBA prospects, Io DeSumo has a higher floor. Right. If I were to project who's definitely going to be an NBA draft pick, it'd be Io. But I just think because of the athleticism, length, the 3-point shooting, Alan Griffin might have a little bit higher of a ceiling than him at that level. But no, I mean, he showed great strides last year. He was more consistent. I talked about the handle. I think he cut his turnover percentage by more than half. His 3-point percentage remained good and it got better last year. And as I said, the rebounding was a huge key. He was great on the offensive glass. I mean, you'll see some putback dunks out of Alan Griffin. He's got that kind of athleticism. He's just relentless to the basket. So I think his next steps, as I said, it wouldn't shock me if he can be an all-ACC kind of player or one of Syracuse's best players. If he takes that next step in these other areas of his game that he can refine, that'd be the handle and defense for me.
For those who haven't seen Griffin, if you could give, just style-wise, an NBA comparison, someone who a basketball fan would be able to picture, who is Alan Griffin emulate the best on the court?
That's a good question. I think if you're – it might not be the sexy answer people are looking for, but for NBA people, you might think, man, that could be a pretty good player. Trevor Ariza?
Okay.
One, long, athletic, good effort. Energy, shoots threes, gives you rebounds, but probably not your go-to guy of an NBA team, right? Now, can he be one of Syracuse's best players? Yeah, I think that's certainly the case because Trevor Ariza certainly was one of the best players for him. I think that's the kind of guy you're looking at. Just can make that kind of impact on the wing, versatile, does a little bit of everything for you on the court.
Almost every team, I feel like, is looking for a Trevor Ariza right now. So that's not a bad role to fill for Griffin. You just mentioned it a little bit, him being able to take the next step. Syracuse lost its leading scorer and actually the ACC's leading scorer, Elijah Hughes, after this season. when he decided to go professional. What have you seen from Griffin at Illinois that makes you believe he can be the go-to guy in an offense?
That's what I'm interested to see. How does he respond now that he's going to be one of the top guys in the scouting report? He doesn't have Io DeSumo next to him. Doesn't have Andres Feliz, who was kind of maybe not an NBA guy, but was a really good, tough Big Ten guard. Doesn't have Kofi Coburn, who was an elite big man here at Illinois. You know, Allen was kind of the third, fourth, or fifth option for Illinois. At Syracuse, the expectations rise, right? I think he's going to score. I think he's going to do well. But does he have someone to create for him and to get him open, or does he have to do that himself? That's the next part of his game. If he's going to be able to ask to handle the ball, create for himself, he's more of a spot-up guy. He showed late in the season, though, that he can take over a game. There was a game against Northwestern where Alan Griffin took over, and he was the reason Illinois won. Had 20-something points and had a fantastic game. He showed some star potential that I felt if Io DeSumo left, that Alan Griffin had the chance to be maybe Illinois' leading scorer this year. So I don't know. I think there were personal reasons were mostly why he left Illinois, because basketball reasons, I didn't think there were a lot of them. But the one basketball reason would be maybe that I think Adam Miller, who's a top freshman coming in, those are the go-to guys. I need to go someplace where I can be the go-to guy, if basketball is even a factor here. That'll be interesting to see. That's what I don't know yet about Alan Griffin. He showed flashes of that, but consistently he didn't have to do that for Illinois, because Io DeSumo, if anybody watched him this past year, he was as clutch of a player as any in the Big Ten and really the country. He took over games for the most part. Alan Griffin hasn't had to do that as much.
But Griffin, you said, has been working alongside him a lot, right?
Yeah, those two were pretty close. And I think they both had a lot of success in high school. Both were on championship teams in high school. Both were a big key to Illinois going from one of the worst teams in the Big Ten, which this is a storied program that's had a bad last decade. These guys were young last year, sophomores, and they were two of the top four players probably for Illinois and leading them back to winning. So I think they both showed the energy, and I think they both showed the talent to be those type of players.
All right, now a little fun. I got a trivia question for you. That's Illinois-Syracuse. There's been one other player ever to transfer between the two schools. Before I ask you, when did you start covering Illinois basketball? Because I might give you a hint if this isn't completely within the range. The year was 1996. That's what I'll say. Is the year that the guy played for Illinois, and then he transferred to Syracuse. It was 1 year with the Illini, and then 3 years with the Orange. I'll be impressed if you get it.
Yeah, see, I didn't start really watching Illinois basketball probably until the early 2000s with Frank Williams, for people who might remember him. Brian Cook, former NBA player, played with Kobe and the Lakers. So I didn't start watching until then. Started covering him in about 2007. So you stumped me on this one.
Okay, well, in case you're wondering, it was Ryan Blackwell, who played with Illinois in 95-96, came to Syracuse, and ended up being one of the great players for the Orange of the late 90s. And hopefully Alan Griffin can do something like that again for Syracuse. Jeremy Werner, thank you so much for joining the program today. Really appreciate it, and hope to talk to you soon if we're playing some Big Ten ACC basketball come this winter.
As you can tell, I'm pretty high on Alan Griffin. So Syracuse got a good one. I'm excited to see where his career goes. I really enjoyed covering him. But thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to watching his career from here.
Another thank you to Jeremy Werner for a lot of in-depth stuff on Alan Griffin. And he leaves us, you know, we're talking a little Ryan Blackwell and coming out of the break here. So 98 Big East tournament, it's the game winner versus St. John's. A lot of our older fans will remember that one. The newer fans remember him for, you know, his work with Boeheim's Army, been coaching them for the last couple of years. And he's a local guy now, coaching at Liverpool High School, spends a lot of time with the team still. So maybe that'll be a really good benefit for Griffin to kind of become a little bit better affiliated, help him, you know, make that transition a little bit easier, as you've got a guy like Blackwell who's still pretty involved with the team, to be able to talk with him, sit with him, do whatever, and help him kind of acclimate to Syracuse and work that transfer. So it helps us, you know, kind of get into a little bit more of Griffin. And you look at last year's numbers, 8 points, 5 rebounds per game in about 18 minutes per game. he's got a lot of potential. I think, you know, you don't want to extrapolate those numbers and try and, you know, just make them look like if you double his numbers and put him at 36 minutes, you don't want to put him at that 16 points, 10 rebounds, but he could easily be in that range. He pounds the boards. He's a great scorer. He shoots lights out and he can get to the rim if he needs to.
I fully agree with you, by the way, on the be wary of over extrapolation. I saw something recently talking about how, you know, per 40, he averaged like 14 rebounds per game. Like, that's cool. That's never going to happen. But I do think that the biggest focus, and you mentioned it before the interview, is the shooting efficiency numbers. I think were really strong for Alan Griffin. And those will dip a little bit with the added shots. But at the same time, I agree with you again that it can't take a landslide. A 41.5% free throw shooter isn't a 32% free throw, or sorry, 3-point shooter the next year. So I expect Griffin, if not to be a star, to at least immediately make an impact behind the arc. And I also think that there's potential for him to be the team's best player this year, though, because what he showed at Illinois was really strong. And I think for people who don't pay attention to the Big Ten that much, they may not know this was a really good and is a really good Illinois team.
They're going to be great this year too.
Yeah. He left them more because it was closer to home and he didn't have a starting role. It wasn't that this is like a parallel to the Elijah Hughes situation where he comes from, you know, he was a decent player on an East Carolina team and you don't know how good they were. And then he turns out to be great. You know, this guy was one of the contributors on one of the best teams in the country last year. And now he's looking to do it on his own, you know, a la Harrison Barnes leaves the Warriors or whatever. So I think that there's so much of a range for where he could be this year. I don't think that the efficiency goes away, but really, and Jeremy Warren talked about it, the interesting thing, can he step into a leading role? He has a lot of people in his family who have experience with this, and he has experience with it as a great New York high school player. Can he prove it now on the college level and maybe even have a bid to go to the pros eventually in the future?
Yeah, definitely a lot to prove. But when you look at, we kind of talked about that lineup, he doesn't necessarily have to be the biggest star on the court. He's got a lot that can kind of help alleviate that pressure, which I think will really come to his benefit. This is a guy that he's a scrappy player, and he got into a couple of scruffs at Illinois, and I think that's just kind of the player he is. He gives it all at all points in time. He kind of reminds me of that Paul Harris, Eric Devendorf type of player that, you know, you kind of love to have on your team, hate to play against, but he's a flashy, not too flashy, but has those big star moments. And he's going to pound the floor on the defensive end. He's going to really get in your face, and he's going to be a pain to play against. And I think that just goes to show, and I think he's going to become a fan favorite because of the way he plays. And he's got that pizzazz and that kind of bad boy-esque vibe to him. And I think that's going to really just help him flow and develop and become a star at Syracuse. Maybe not, you know, an Elijah Hughes immediate impact star, but he's going to have that immediate impact and be able to contribute significantly to this team and continue that line of success that Syracuse transfers have had in the recent years.
I love the guy's attitude, by the way, in the few times that I've seen him play in the highlight videos that I've watched, it's kind of infectious. Like I think when a guy plays with that edge, it's not that he's, you know, dirty or chippy, but just with that competitive fire, it gets everyone on your team into the game. And I read an article about it where, you know, he mentioned he had great success in high school. He came to Illinois, barely played his first year, still struggled to get into the lineup. I think he's in a really good spot right now because he's kind of been knocked down from grace and has like a chip on his shoulder. Not to mention, you know, his dad was an NBA player and coach. His brother could be a top five pick in the coming years, and his sister plays at UConn. So he's kind of, even though playing at Syracuse is an incredible accomplishment, he's almost like the forgotten of the pack of basketball players in his family. So I think this is really a prove it time for Alan Griffin. And I agree with you that he'll be a fan favorite because whether he's putting up deep threes or huge putback slams, he's jumping around. He's having a lot of fun on the floor, and he's letting you and the other team know how he feels at all times.
Oh yeah, the lineage, the flashy play, the contribution to the great history of recent transfers, obviously outside of maybe Geno Thorpe, who we'll just kind of toss aside and not remember him at all. But when you look at the recent guys, when you look at Hughes's impact, Gillen's impact, John White, Michael Benajay, there is so much that you've gotten out of these transfers, and I don't see a way where he's not going to be added to that list in terms of his contributions this season and in all likeliness next season as well. So he's going to be that big contributor, and a lot of lineup questions still yet to be answered. Those will be answered with time and as that season inches closer. We've got football season coming up. We'll round things up back with that in the next coming weeks, as you know, North Carolina is only a couple of weeks away. We're not sure where things stand with that. So stick with us at Ostrom Avenue Pod on Twitter, and stick along with us wherever you get your podcasts. Give us a review. Give us a 5-star rating. We'd love to hear your feedback. Tweet at us at Ostrom Avenue Pod. We've got some more polls coming up soon, some more interactive content coming up with you. We're inching closer to 100 followers. Help us out. Let's break the century mark together before this season starts. We're getting there. For Ben Shulman, I'm Owen Valentine, the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We'll catch you next week. Stay safe.